Thank you very much.
We'll see how the time goes. Yeah. If it's hopeless, it's late.
Yeah. Okay.
Friday afternoon, the later than
I don't.
Anyway, let's just see how.
Are you? It's a 155. There's just no way.
Let's wait and see what time it is when we finish up. And this was important, and we had to do this.
Yeah,
that's absolutely fine.
Appeal number 052029, Charlton versus Davis.
Unusual seat.
Good morning, Mr. Kobe.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Andrew Kobe, and I'm with the Indiana Attorney General's Office, and I'm here representing respondent Ed Buss. Ed Buss has replaced Cecil Davis as the superintendent of the Indiana State Prison, and so he is the proper respondent in this case. The district court erred in granting habeas relief in this case, so this court should reverse the judgment of the district court. The main reason is that the defendant cannot show he was denied the effective assistance of counsel, because Indiana has never required in modern times a separate instruction on the accident defense. So therefore, defendant was not prejudiced, or was counsel deficient for not tendering an instruction to the trial court on the defense of accident. The district court here relied on the case of Sanders v. Cotton. The district court seems to be under the misguided apprehension that Sanders applies to this case, which it in no way does. Sanders involved a ineffective assistance of appellate counsel claim for not raising the claim that the instruction on sudden heat was denied by the trial court. So in that case, tendered instruction on sudden heat. The trial court denied to give that instruction to the jury. Appellate counsel did not raise that issue on appeal, and so ineffective assistance of appellate counsel for not raising that issue. Here we have a case in which trial counsel did not tender an instruction, and the claim is that trial counsel was ineffective for not tendering an instruction. Also, the main difference between Sanders' case and this case is that the defenses are fundamentally different. In Sanders, the case was a sudden heat instruction. Here we have accident defense. In sudden heat, a person is guilty of the elements of murder, but did the conduct with sudden heat, which is an extra element which reduces the level of offense.
So, I mean, I take it your argument's basically that, at least as far as Indiana law is concerned, the concept, if you will, of accident was already encompassed in the instructions, because in order to find beyond a reasonable doubt that the murder was committed with the appropriate state of mind, it couldn't have been an accident, whereas in Sanders, it's extra?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And the Indiana Supreme Court and both the Indiana Supreme Court and the Indiana Court of Appeals has said that exact point, that any accident instruction is already implicitly in, it's the negative of...
They didn't say so until some years after this trial, right?
They didn't make that announcement until that point, but they were just making an announcement of what the law was. They had never been asked to make that decision before that time. So they were merely announcing what the law was now and what the law has always been since 1977, when Indiana codified its criminal law code under the model penal code standards of mens rea, defining knowingly, intentionally, recklessly, and negligently.
You've cited, you know, this evidence suggesting that this wasn't an accidental shooting. Did the abrasion on Mr. Charleston's hand support his theory that it was?
There actually was. It was on the victim's hand.
I meant.
She had a small abrasion on her hand, very, very small. And that evidence, compared to the pathological evidence that shows that the gunshot was a contact gunshot wound to the top of the head that tracks straight down the body, shows that his version of how the accident occurred could not have happened. He said both he and the victim had their hands on the gun when the gun went off, in between them. Obviously, the gun at waist level cannot cause a contact gunshot wound that enters the head and goes tracks straight down. That pathological evidence is wholly consistent with her laying on the couch and the petitioner coming up and shooting her in the head while she was sleeping. Quickly on the petitioner's claim regarding the reckless homicide instruction, I would first point out the procedural posture here. No certificate of appealability was granted on this issue, and petitioner has not requested any. And because it is without merit, I would suggest that it...
Well, it's your appeal. He doesn't have a cross appeal, right?
Yeah.
No, he is...
The state doesn't have to have a certificate of appealability.
Correct, but his cross appeal on the reckless homicide instruction, that the district court erred in not granting habeas relief on the reckless homicide instruction. There is no certificate of appealability on that cross appeal.
Yeah, I guess he got the habeas. I viewed that as an alternative reason for saying it's okay to have the new trial. You know, in other words, there's a bottom line to this case.
Right.
There was a reason for the bottom line, but I thought he was just saying there was a second reason that might also support that bottom line.
Well, and regardless, the claim is without merit. So, regardless of the certificate of appealability issue, the claim is without merit because the issue was raised to the Indiana State Courts as a state law issue, not any sort of federal claim. The district court recognized that and dismissed it as not cognizable. To the extent the petitioner tries to add a federal component now on appeal, it's procedurally defaulted for not raising it in the district court. I would point as the standard of due process, I would point the court to Reeves v. Battle, 279, Fed 3rd, 905, that in order to even make out a federal claim, assuming that the petitioner gets past the hurdles of non-cognizability and procedural default, he cannot show a fundamental miscarriage of justice. Here, the jury obviously believed the evidence that the defendant knowingly or intentionally killed the victim and did not believe his accident defense. Because the district court erred in granting habeas relief on the ineffective assistance of counsel claim, this court should reverse the district court.
Thanks. Mr. Kleiber.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Troy Kleiber, appearing on behalf of the petitioner appellee Michael Charleton. The district court below was correct to grant the petition for habeas corpus relief in this case. Mr. Charleton has been repeatedly denied the opportunity to have the jury instructed on each defense and lesser-included offense that was supported by the evidence in this case. Specifically, there are two instructions that should have been given but which were not. The first is on the defense of accident, which was the primary defense theory in this case. And the second...
You know, saying that a killing is accidental is just another way of saying it was not intentional, right?
No, that's not specifically true in this case, Your Honor, no, because under Indiana law, the accident instruction, which I'm somewhat surprised that the state is saying that the accident instruction was not embodied in Indiana law leading up to this point, because that point is actually uncontested in the briefs, that the accident instruction was required under Indiana law leading up to this point.
Well, just because it's a separate instruction doesn't mean that it might not be theoretically duplicative. Sometimes you just call the jury's attention to something. Sometimes you say, be careful of, you know, interested witnesses or what have you. I mean, you say things. But why isn't the defense of accident just the antithesis of, you know, or the concept of accident, the antithesis of intentional?
It is theoretically duplicative, but in this case it would not be. If you look at the actual instruction that was given in this case on murder, it was whether Mr. Charlton knowingly killed the victim. However, the defense of accident is not defined in terms of not knowing what was happening, but rather that it was unintentional and not reckless.
But if the jury was instructed on the need to find intent, then what does an instruction on accident contribute?
Well, the jury certainly could have, in this instance where Mr. Charlton admitted to shooting the victim, albeit accidentally, the jury could have easily been confused about whether or not that was a knowing shooting, but at the same time unintentional and not reckless, which is what's embodied in the accident instruction, therefore providing a different content and a description of the different degrees of culpability. And as a practical matter, that could have readily changed the outcome, which is really what...
Is that right? I mean, given the evidence of the trajectory that the bullet took, I mean, it seems rather contorted to me to imagine, you know, getting a gun all the way around so that the barrel is pointed right on top of your head, if that's not even what he was saying.
Your Honor, there's ample evidence in the record to support his theory that it was an accident, that
they
were engaged.
Well, but what about the trajectory? I realize there's the sexual contact evidence and the abrasion evidence, but the trajectory was uncontested, right? That's just in the pathology report.
Yes, Your Honor. But the import of that is disputed, however, as is ultimately what did happen, because there's evidence to the contrary, and the test is whether or not that instruction was warranted on the basis of evidence. And that is, if any evidence can be provided to support the theory, then the instruction should be given. In fact, the Indiana Supreme Court on direct appeal described that there was evidence of an accident. And that's a factual finding that the highest court of Indiana made that's not been contested by the state in this case.
Is there any explanation why he came to the house at 4 o'clock in the morning with a loaded gun?
Yes, Your Honor. The explanation was that he was invited by the victim.
Yeah, with a loaded gun?
Your Honor, the record reflects that he always carries around a loaded gun. He has a permit to do so, and except when he was not at work.
He had a fight with her. She kicked him out of the house.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then 4 o'clock in the morning, he comes back with a gun.
The evidence shows that they did have a very volatile relationship, that the victim was very hot-tempered, that he carried around a loaded gun in his waist pocket, but this was something, again, that he always did. He'd given a gun to the victim as well. There's evidence that they had a dispute about something he might have done to that gun, which really, all of this tends to lend support to the idea that the reckless homicide instruction should have been given as well. Because as the case relied upon principally by the state in this case, the Springer case, reflects, this is a classic instance of reckless homicide. However, that instruction was not given. But shifting first to the first and foremost theory that the district court granted the petition on the basis of, that was the accident instruction and the failure of defense counsel to request the instruction. Now, applying the test given in Strickland v. Washington, which really forms the basis for whether or not there was constitutional error in this case, the first element is to look and see whether or not Mr. Charlton's counsel was deficient at the time of the proceedings. Now, in this case, it's uncontested that Indiana state law required the instruction to be given if evidence were to support it. There was a model jury instruction and plenty of case laws supporting that proposition. However, inexplicably, Mr. Charlton's counsel failed to request the instruction, which was plainly deficient at the time. The second element...
But it wouldn't be deficient today? I mean, given the changes in Indiana law? I mean, that seems like an odd constitutional theory to me.
It is the test nonetheless, Your Honor. However, Mr. Charlton is not prepared to concede that the Indiana law has changed in that respect. Okay. In fact, we think that it would be unreasonable to read the Springer case to hold that the instruction is not required in this context, where there was no reckless homicide instruction given. And, in fact, the accident instruction would not merely be the mirror image of the murder instruction that was given. In this case, it has different levels of culpability and would add additional content and give the jury the option to select Mr. Charlton's primary defense as a way of finding him not guilty. And that's the substantive right that was violated for Mr. Charlton, that by failing to pursue the instruction, Mr. Charlton did not receive an instruction that he was entitled to under Indiana law, and as a result, the jury was not able to consider that theory and adopt it in order to find him not guilty. Now, I'd also like to address briefly the state's argument that the reckless homicide instruction argument was somehow procedurally defaulted and that it was necessary to file a cross appeal or something along those lines. First, as Your Honor pointed out, this is a case where we are the appellee, and we prevailed below. We received the petition, was granted. Therefore, there's nothing for us to appeal. It's merely an alternative grounds to affirm, as this court has held is sufficient. Additionally, the argument, while his counsel may have made it clearer as to it had a federal element in addition to a state law component, the arguments made by counsel in the state court is effectively the same as the federal argument. That is, the fact pattern is identical, an instruction was warranted by the evidence but was not given, and the legal argument is the same, which is that it should have been given. Therefore, regardless of whether or not he characterized it as a federal offense, is not necessary, does not necessarily mean that it was procedurally defaulted. And that's an approach this court has adopted in the Sweeney case, which we cite in our brief. To the extent that the arguments would effectively be the same, the state is asking this court to put form over substance. And the substance of the argument is the same. And that substance indicates that if you look at the evidence in this case, there is clear evidence of reckless homicide, which is supported by the state's primary case, the Springer case, which the state's really trying to have it both ways. They're trying to use Springer as an argument why the ineffective assistance of counsel must fail, but they ignore it when it comes to showing why the reckless homicide instruction was required. So really what happened here is there were several options that the jury should have been given to consider based on the defenses and the lesser included offenses, which were amply supported by the evidence in this case. And Mr. Charlton did not have the opportunity to instruct the jury as to those defenses. So it's really necessary in this case to have a retrial where he can receive the effective assistance of counsel to pursue all of those instructions and to receive any benefits he may now have under law. And if there are no other questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kobe.
Just a few points. It's not inexplicable as to why defense counsel didn't tender an instruction on accident. He testified at the post-conviction relief hearing that the reason he didn't tender a defense on accident was he didn't think that was a very viable defense in this case. The evidence besides the petitioner's testimony, petitioner's testimony is the only testimony that would support an accident defense, and trial counsel testified he didn't even know what petitioner was going to say when he got on the stand because he had told him two alternate versions and wasn't sure whether he was going to stick with the accident version or the other version he told counsel. So counsel pursued a strategy of arguing that there's a difference between innocence and not guilty.
This is all in the record?
Yes, this is in the PCR hearing transcript, which is in the record. And there's strategic reasons why trial counsel may have not wanted a accident defense that gave concrete terms to the accident. Rather, without the instruction, he could argue generally, we're not sure. Here's some evidence. We're not sure what to deal with. The victim's car was moved, and the state couldn't explain that. There were some other things trial counsel believed the state couldn't explain, and so the main defense to the jury was, we're not sure really what happened here. We're not saying he's innocent, but there is a possibility that he's not guilty. The basis of the denial of the accident defense is not absence of evidence in the record. It's that it's duplicative of the instructions on reasonable doubt, presumption of innocence, the elements of the offense. Springer is not a reckless homicide instruction. The state is not trying to have it both ways. Springer is a criminal recklessness case, not a reckless homicide case, which is two different crimes, and what has to be reckless in those two different crimes are obviously different. Reckless homicide, the shooting has to be reckless. Criminal recklessness just has to be doing something that is criminally reckless. The petitioner argues that form shouldn't be put over substance, but habeas law is chiefly, a lot of times, about putting form over substance. Petitioner has to meet the requirements set down in the habeas rules, and one of those is that petitioner must fairly present his federal claim to the state courts. Here he did not do that. Nowhere in the briefs below did he mention any federal law, statute, constitution, case. It was all based on state law. This court should reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. And Mr. Kleiber, you were appointed, and we thank you for your very fine representation of your client. And, of course, we thank Mr. Covey as well for his fine representation.
Excuse me while I walk to the other side now. For our normal, the usual side.
Your usual seat.
How does it feel sitting over there?
Very good once in a while.